Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Late Flag, the aftermatch podcast for the LFC Red Poets. I'm your host, Les Lawson, and tonight I'm joined by Tom Keegan and Pete Warburton as we look back on last night's 1-0 victory for Liverpool, which ultimately wasn't enough to see them progress to the semi-finals of the Europa League, and ultimately Jurgen Klopp's final season and European campaign as Liverpool Football Club manager ended without the dream final in Dublin when we hoped that Jurgen would lift his final trophy as Liverpool manager, but we still have the league to play for. So Tom, let me start with you. It was a bit of a when I seen the team, I was really happy with the team. I would have started probably 10 of that 11, in normal circumstances, maybe 9 nor 10 of them. But it was a more balanced team than the one that was selected in the first leg, and one that quite rightly showed that Lancer they respected, they deserved, which, as we discussed on the podcast last week, from fans to players to the management, we didn't think the team selection or the fans sort of talk before the first leg gave Atlanta the respect that they quite rightly deserved.
Yeah, I think I would have picked that side, Les. It was a strong side, wasn't it? You looked at it and we went out, as you say, it was balanced. It was a balanced side. It had, I think, Trent and Robbo back with Konate and Van Dijk gives you stability across the back. I think one of the stats they were saying last night, that was only the third time that all four of them, all the back line, counting the goalkeepers, played all season. So I think that highlights what's been the problem, doesn't it? From that point of view, it was a solid back four, back five. You looked in midfield. I know some people are a bit disappointed that Curtis got a start, but with Szoboszlai and McAllister and Curtis, you wouldn't have complained at that. I think they're three good players, really quality players. So yeah, happy with that. And up front, I think Gakpo has done enough for the last couple of weeks to deserve his run in the team. And I think overall, I was more than happy with the team.
Hey, what did you make of it? I mean, you couldn't really be unhappy with the team. There's certain players, who maybe have the fingers pointed at them because they're struggling for form for various reasons. But it was a real good team that had been selected last night, wasn't it? And in my opinion, as I said earlier, a much better balanced side than in the first leg.
Yeah, it's definitely definitely the first choice back five, and that's no disrespect to Quirin, who's done well while he's been in goal. But it's probably the first choice back five, with Ali behind the four that played. I wasn't too sure. I thought maybe Endo would have got a start. I know the last couple of games he struggled, but I thought with Endo playing in the six, it would have released McAllister further forward. So I probably, hindsight's a wonderful thing and stuff, but I thought maybe Endo would get a start over Curtis. I agree with Gakpo. I think he's deserved the place. I think when he's come on in little cameos, when he's come on as sub, he's played well. I was wondering whether maybe Jota might have got a nod, but whether he's not fit enough to do 90 minutes, yes, I don't know. But I thought Jota may have got a nod, and if that was the case, maybe Gakpo could have still found a place instead of Diaz. But it looked a decent side. It was certainly a decent side to start the game. And when you looked at the bench, it was a little bit stronger than we've been getting over the last few weeks with all the injuries. So I wasn't disappointed with the 11. I just thought there might have been a couple of different personnel. I can't remember now what team I thought was picked, but it's probably pretty close to what we all thought.
Tom, and for once, Liverpool made a decent start. A penalty in the first few minutes, which gave us the start we all wanted. And then we thought that, right, Salah took another decent penalty And, you know, you thought, right, that's the start we need. Let's go at them. Let's get the second goal. And let's really put them under pressure. And we can, you know, we can do this now. So, but it never actually worked out like that, did it? It was, but let's just talk about the start in the first instance.
It was a great thing. I've made the points out there about in the last couple of podcasts about the slow starts over for the last 5 or 6 games where we've started slowly. But it was the opposite, wasn't it? We were quick, we were decisive. I think the introduction of Trent, as much as I love Conor Bradley, and I think Conor's a brilliant young player, I think the thing that Trent gives you is the authority that he carries with him. Even like he's not... Even like, as we were saying, like he only lasted 70 minutes, but the 70 minutes he was on, he was quality. Everything about him, you know, his passing wasn't perfect, but overall, he does things that nobody else in the team does. So I think having Trent in the side gave us a little bit of impetus, and I think we made that start. And as you said, it was his cross, wasn't it, that come across, which the lad handled in the end for the penalty. As you say, Mo, I thought it was an excellent penalty. Excellent penalty by Mo. Said the keeper the wrong way. You can't ask for more than that. And overall, I thought like we'd done all right. But as you said, I think once we got the first goal, then we started to sort of say, well, we don't have to overcommit to anything. So they kept possession and they kept playing well. But as you said, I think they started to, you know, we started to give them a little bit of a foothold back into the game.
Pete, it was a better start than over recent games. We got the goal. And then, as Tom said there, we continued to be patient. But within that patience, we were still sort of looking dangerous and creating chances. Or half chances. You know, there was a few sort of passes that just got cut out. And, you know, crosses and whatever else that were well defended. You know, and you're always thought in that first sort of 20, 25 minutes that the second goal wasn't far away.
Yeah. I think there was a couple of instances. I'm trying to remember. I think Szoboszlai was almost on the end of a through ball. Like you say, either the balls were just a little bit overweighted, if you want, or the defenders got in the way. There was a chance for Luis Diaz that he got onto a through ball and the keeper came out and smothered it. But yet, all in all, the first, you know, the way we started and getting the early goal as well was, you know, you weren't chasing the game too early. We had lots of time. We were in total control. It was quite... It was quite funny, actually, because you looked at the way we were playing and we were in the actual formation as such sort of went out the window. You'd had times where Robert was playing centre-forward. It was dead fluid. And as you say, Trent was cutting inside and he was spraying the ball about and he was hitting those long diagonals. And I just thought it's going to be a matter of time. If we get a second goal here, they could fall to bits. I think that was the only thing that was keeping them going, that we kept the score down to one. They didn't threaten. They had a goal that was disallowed, but it was a good yard offside. And other than that, I can't remember them really. I think maybe a couple of our wayward passes were our own undoing, but they never really looked like, you know, equalising. And as I say, because we scored the early goal, I thought we've got so much time left. We're going to create more chances. And for the main, we were in total control of the first half, to be honest.
Yeah, Tom, it was, you know, the first sort of half an hour or so, you know, we were probing and probing and probing. And then there was a couple of incidents that basically ultimately were the turning points in the game. You know, one was the awful miss by Mo Salah when he's played through and he's, you know, let's be honest here. You know, we all love Mo Salah. You know what I mean? He'll always be. You're one of the greatest players that's ever played for Liverpool Football Club. But he's certainly nowhere near that level at the minute. You know, 2-3 years ago, you know, not the recent AFCON, but the AFCON before, he'd have had that chance. It'd have been gobbled up in the back of the net. without a shadow of a doubt. He didn't even hit the target. It was just screwed wide. And then there was the handball incident when Luis Diaz was basically through, and I thought that was a red card, because when you actually look at the incident again, the defender actually moves his arm to cut the ball out because he knows he's beat. And he played one of his jokers, and the referee bought it, you know what I mean? And VAR bought it and didn't make the decision that they should have done. So what did you make of those two incidents?
I think the miss... I thought Mo had started off quite well, to be fair. You know, like he was drifting deeper, and he was playing picking balls up, and he was making passes. He was doing all the things like, and I thought, well, he looks a lot more positive. I think he, do you know what? I'm not gonna sit here and what's it called, Mo, but I He always missed chances. He missed a glorious chance against Real Madrid at Anfield when he was only easier to score than to miss. So he has missed them before. I think the problem for that is for what he'd done. I have no idea how he missed it, Les. I don't think he's been the same since he's come back from his injury. I really don't. I don't know the levels of that with his fitness.
Do you really actually think? You say he's not been there. You know, let's try and be a little bit honest here.
I don't think he's finished, Les. How can you say a player is finished who's banged in 24 goals in a season?
Well, Cristiano Ronaldo scored.
I'm not talking about Cristiano Ronaldo.
Sometimes it doesn't always tell the whole story, does it?
I know, and that's true. And I don't know whether he's finished.
What are your own eyes?
You've watched football
as well as I have, right? And we're all guilty of it with players of the past, where you love the players so much and they give you so much as a player. And we've seen some great players, in our time. And there always comes a time with every player where they reach that point and then the career is only going one way and it's not going forward. Now, I'm not saying that Mo Salah has reached that stage yet, but what I'm seeing is making me worried that he's sort of, he's now starting to go away from what made him that extra special talent that we all loved. It happened with Ian Rush. It happened with Robbie Fowler, it happened with John Barnes, you know what I mean? And there comes a time with all players where it just starts to go the other way.
I don't know. I think he's 31. It's not hardly like that. Like he's like 34 years of age and well gone past his best. You know, like earlier on in the season, he was creating chances left, right and centre, playing some brilliant football. That doesn't give you the impression of someone who's finished. I see the same sort of thing with Szoboszlai. I seen a player come in at the first part of the season, Szoboszlai, who I thought, my God, this fella is Steven Gerrard that we recreated. But Szoboszlai today is no than what he was at the beginning of the season. Now, I don't know whether it's fatigue. And honest to God, Les, I don't know if it's fatigue. I'm not defending Mo because it's indefensible. How could I sit here? And because I said to you last night, that was the turning point of the game. We go in 2-0 after the 42 minutes, as I just said to Peter, and Gasperini is like, his team talk is totally different. Whereas, so it was crucial. It was a terrible miss, but I don't know.
Look back, Man United 2 weeks ago. He missed two absolute sitters. Absolute sitters. How many did he miss against Brighton at home? Now, he scored the winning goal in that game, which stopped a lot of the criticism flying his way. Right, Crystal Palace at the weekend. You know, he was sub against Atlanta. He got hauled off against Sheffield United. He got taken off again last night. That's not the most salad, Tom.
I know, but we don't know his fitness status. Do you? I don't know. Is he playing within himself? I genuinely don't know. Whether you say to me, do I think he'll be there next season? I don't probably don't. I think because sentiments in football is that like he'll probably move him on at the end of the season. But like I think to be blaming it on him.
I'm just making the point. It's like a discussion point.
I accept that people are now asking
the question, and as you know, as we're doing the podcast, you know, and I'm hosting, it's right that I ask the question.
Of course it is, and I'm not dodging the question.
You sound like Prime Minister's question time, Tom.
No, I don't. I'm not. I'm thinking. I'm trying to be. I'm trying to look at it. I did last night. I tortured myself last night over his miss when we went to bed, and then and all the time we're all the way through. You know, thinking if you'd only put it away, but then you listen to. I was listening to somebody today on. I think it was on Merseyside earlier. A young girl on, and she made a lot of sense in what she said. And I thought, you know, there's a lot of truth in that, he's never had a muscle injury. He's never had an injury as far as I can say it. But all of a sudden, he's took two full stints out with an injury. I don't know whether that's affected his play. He should have scored last night. I wouldn't defend him. I really wouldn't. Please come in and save me.
Tom, what I was going to say, I'll just let you two get on with it because I'm quite fun listening to this. You mentioned two players, Tom. You mentioned Mo and you mentioned Dominic as well. And it's all well and good being physically fit to play. But if you know, you've heard players saying that they get into a certain rhythm, don't they, when they're playing well? And when they've been out for so long, it's not that easy. Just you might be 100% fit. I don't know if Mo and Savage-Lai are 100%. You'll see it with Jota. I mean, Jota came on last night. I mean, I don't think any of the substitutes really made any difference, to be honest. But, you know, Jota didn't look it up, you know. I know they weren't getting the service. We'll talk about the second half later. But I just think you can be physically fit. You can be fit enough to play football, but you're not match fit. And that's not just your physicality, it's your mental, it's what's going on in your head. And maybe, I don't know, I think he seemed to shin that shot, didn't he, Mo? I don't think he even kicked it.
It was an awful miss.
It was a terrible miss. And I agree with you totally, it was the turning point, because if we go 2-0 up and go in at half-time, I'm certain we'd have at least got to extra time. We'd have got a third. And what that did, it probably gave Atalanta a little bit of a fillip as well to say, right, we've missed a good chance. He got them in at Gasperini, got them in at half time, and he turned round and he obviously tweaked a few things. And in fairness, we came out second half and we ran out of steam, in all honesty, but we never looked like threatening like we did in the first half. But it was a bad miss. And I can see where Les is coming from. The last few games, there have been some bad misses, not just by Mo, by the way, by a lot of the players. And more often than not, he has got himself out of jail because he has ended up scoring the goal or a goal after it. But, I think like most strikers, I mean, you look at Haaland down the road, as many as he scores, he must miss as many as well. And some of them are nailed on. So I don't think it's just totally... I don't know. He must be fit enough to start a game. Don't think they'd risk anybody if they're not 100% fit. But I think part of it is the mental side and whether the match fit in such a way that the mentality is going to get them through the 90 minutes. And as I
It's
say, into the second half, we just it's like someone had boiled a kettle, and then we lost any momentum we had. You
Do
know,
you think he's finished this?
yeah. Well, I was just going to say, I was just going to ask you both a question then, right? And then
Yeah.
I'll come back in and sort of tell you my opinion. Have a think about this. When did you last come out of a game, right? And you've been wowed by Mo Salah, and you thought, wow, what a performance that was by Mo. We openly said on this podcast, I think Ben was on the podcast as well at the time. In the I was coming out of the derby after Anfield, and a guy said to me, an older guy said to me as he was walking past, "Great result, that lad. But I've never seen Salah play so bad." And he scored two goals. One was a penalty, and then we scored the second one on the break. I don't think Mo Salah has reached the level that he reached when he had that brilliant performance against Watford, and then followed it up a week later with that magnificent goal against Manchester City at Anfield. I don't think Mo has, unfortunately for us, reached that level of performance since then. I don't. And as I say, I'll ask you a question really, and I don't know the answer to this. But when was the last time you see Mo be his fullback, no matter who he's been playing against?
Again, this is what's a curve, isn't it? Because it, about where we go and the way we play our we set up our system. When we had strengths marauding down the side, and we played in twos and threes. When we had Manny over the other side with Robbo, and we had two systems where we played like that. How many times? I'll ask you a question. How many times is Mo out there on his own with nobody else and two players stuck to him?
Yeah, but Mo in the past
But
would have been able to cope with that.
there's
But
no
he's
no but
getting
there's no
older now.
options. But there's
No,
no
but
options. There's no players playing past him.
Connor Bradley's
Well,
been over there when he's been playing there. And last night on the right-hand side, you had Trent and Szoboszlai over there with him. Right, but once again, I didn't see him going past his full-back, Tom. I didn't see him going past his fullback. I haven't seen him go past his fullback many times. I don't know what you think on that, Pete.
I think we're coming back to the C word again, Les, aren't we?
Confidence.
Yeah. As I say, you'd have a layoff. I think Tom mentioned it. If it wasn't on the program, it was before we came on air, and he mentioned that he probably came back too soon because he came on against Brentford, scored a goal, and then he went missing again because he'd sort of aggravated the injury. And we all know, us three especially, because we're all getting older, it takes a little. Takes more time to get over aches and pains, and it's no different for professional footballers. I just think there's a few things, like you say, he gets marked out of games. He has two or three players, he's always getting doubled up on. And like Les said, he hasn't really had the fortitude to beat that in seasons gone past. That hasn't bothered him. And I don't know, it may just be a few things. As I say, it's maybe a bit of confidence. Coming back from injuries, he might be playing a little bit within himself. He doesn't want to, get injured. He doesn't want to get a repetitive injury. And in fairness, he's not the only one. As I say, there's people who've been out long term, and even some short term injuries. And you can't just come in and hit the ground running. I mean, we saw Trent last night. I thought he was fantastic for an hour, and then he sort of hit a wall after that. You just can't manufacture these players to be hitting the ground running when they've had long layoffs. So I think it's a few things that come into it. Obviously form is one of them. But you think with some of the misses he's done, like the Old Trafford miss and the Palace game, and certainly the one last night, you just wonder if there's something nagging that he has lost a bit of confidence. I mean, it's happened with Nunes, where he's had pelters because he's missed good chances, and then he goes and puts one away at Brentford that you just never thought he would. When he was running through at Brentford one on one, the last thing I thought I was going to see was a goal. I was just thinking, just do the right thing. But to actually score the goal, he did, and it took a weight off his shoulders, and he played well for a few games after that. And It just comes in peaks and troughs sometimes perform with football. The world's best players go through barren patches, but I just think the misses that we're not just Mo, but some of the misses that we're putting together, you know, it's a standing joke now that, you know, we fire more blanks than a dad's army bloody episode, don't we? You know, we have so many chances, and yet how many do we actually score or get on target? So I don't know. It may be endemic right through the team. You know, there's maybe, you know, we keep saying, oh, one day someone's got to get a hiding off us, but it doesn't seem to be coming around. Let's hope we can put it right on Sunday and get a few, you know, put a few chances away at Fulham. But yeah, it's you know, you scratch your head as a, I mean, certainly we scratch our heads in the stands looking at it, saying, where's it going wrong? And I'm sure Jürgen, I don't know about Tom having sleepless nights, but I think Jürgen must be bloody, you know, up all night thinking, what, where did we go wrong in certain places, you know?
I mean, Tom asked me a question there. Do I think Mo is finished? And I'm not gonna not answer his question. I'm just very, very worried of what I've seen over the majority of this season. To be fair, I mean, Mo's come out and got man of the matches in games, and I've not seen that performance. If you see what I mean, I haven't really seen him beat his fullback, and I hope. You know, what you're saying, Tom, is 100% right, that it is a blip. But with his age, again, I just wonder in the way the team is set up. I mean, the finish against Brighton was a brilliant finish, but he's missed easier chances. Mm. And, you know, he takes them chances against Man United and against Palace and Liverpool there. And ahead at the top of the league now, and I know it's not just him, but he's the main man. You know, he's the superstar, if you like, right? And he's the one who the golden chances have been, you know, fallen to. You know, I hope on Sunday when we're doing this podcast that you're sat there and you're saying to me, "There you go, Les. Do you think Mo's finished now after he's walking away with the match ball?" I really do. And then I hope he goes on the rest of the season and say, there you are. You know, I always told you Mo wasn't finished. Give him a new contract, give him what he wants. But I'm not getting the vibes that I'm seeing that. You know, when Mo went through a bad patch before, and I remember him going through one similarly in the season where we finished second, I think, on 97 points. And he hadn't scored for a number of weeks, and then he scored the sort of winning goal against Southampton away when he broke away and that was his first goal for weeks. And he'd had like little droughts before, but you always felt that he was going to score. I don't get that feeling anymore. And the other thing that I've not seen as well, I've not seen the classic Mo finish where he used to cut in from the right hand side on his left foot and curling into the far post. The last goal I can remember scoring like that was the one against the 115ers in the game after Watford, where he was absolutely unplayable and he was crowned as the best player in the world. And he's not reached that level. And I hope he does. I really hope he does. And
do you know, you asked me a question, Les. You said to me, I was just thinking then, what you just give me something in mind then. You said to me, when's the last time he beat a man? And what's it called? Shevchenko turned him inside out and smashed it into the top corner in the 1-1 draw against Arsenal when we were 1-0 down. He has had his moments. I think... You know,
it's because he set such high standards, Tom. Though,
I know,
isn't
yeah,
it?
And I'm not defending him because his misses have been.
Right to defend him, you can do.
No, I don't want to. I don't want to because I don't want to defend him because his form at the moment is worrying. But I also think Nunes is the same. I don't think Nunes come on and like offered anything last night. He didn't offer efforts. He offered nothing. And here's another player who doesn't look like he could hit a barn door at the moment. He's missed loads of chances.
A question there, Tom. Just again, and you know, this might just be a coincidence, right? And it might have nothing to do with it. Right. But it's just a thought that like occurred to me, during the week, and I've spoke to people about it in work and stuff. And they sort of ummed and ahed about it. But Nunes was playing his best football when it was him, Jota and Diaz up front, right? And since Mo's come back in the team, Nunes' performances have suffered. Yeah, prior to sort of Mo going to the AFCON, right, Nunes was linking up with Mo and making a lot of goals for Mo. But now that chemistry seems to have gone. So I can't really work out what's happened there. But certainly Nunes was at his most, playing his best football and looking as though we were creating chances for him. But over the last sort of 3 or 4 weeks in those games, yeah, he missed a bad chance against Atlanta in the first leg. Right. But we haven't created an awful lot of other chances for him, like they're being created for Mo. I don't know. What's your view on that?
I don't know. I think there's just something. There's something lacking, isn't it? Because what we were saying earlier on in the podcast, if anyone listens to our podcast all the way through, or we have lots of people who listen all the time, and they'll know we were talking about the five of them. Like having goals from all over them. You take one out or you take two out, and another two come in and you start banging goals in. And yet, none of them at the moment are free flowing, are they? Even Jota, he's been unlucky since he's come back from injuries, and he's a long way from fitness, Jota. I feel for the lad because we're struggling at the moment and we're desperate for goals and we threw him in and everybody's expecting him, to find the goal. Oh, he said to me the other day, if a chance falls to Jota, he'll put it away. But as everyone said, it takes a bit of, as Peter said before, it takes a long time for these people to come back and get, the match sharpness. But goals seem to be a problem, whether it is the confidence thing, I'm not a great believer. I once said I'm not a great believer in confidence, but I'm starting to convince myself here now. But and confidence, but all of them at the moment don't look particularly, like when they get through in one on one, I don't feel really.
It
I'm
isn't
a bit
even that.
nervous, whoever it is.
There was a couple of occasions last night. Certainly, they were against Palace and even Atalanta in the first leg, although not many. And it's almost like they're unwilling to take the responsibility to have a shot. And I mean, as Jack said, they're playing like Arsenal used to, trying to score the perfect goal. And I'm not too sure that they are. I'm just wondering if, in the back of the mind, they sort of want to pass the responsibility on, and then, there's sometimes they're 8 and 10 yards out, and I know Gakpo was. There was a couple of times Gakpo, I think it was against Palace, and you just wanted him to pull the trigger because you've seen him score goals from the edge in the outside the box. But it's as though they're worried that if they miss, that they're going to get berated for it. And it's, as I say, Les uses that C word a lot, and I think that's correct. I think confidence is not just down to the single player. I think it runs through the team. And I think there are times when we lack a bit of confidence. And even last night, there were a couple of occasions where they were just on the edge of the box, sobbers like McAllister and people like that, who have got a shot in them. But they were trying to thread these little intricate balls through a forest of legs. And it just, I don't know, you just hope that, like, come Sunday against Fulham, it all just clicks. And the confidence comes back. I mean, going back to Mo, he's going to be up, if he's fit, he's going to be up against a big opponent in that Anthony Robinson because he's got pace to burn. And the thoughts, like Les said, when was the last time you saw Mo take a fullback on? I don't think he's going to get much change out of that kid because he's very, very quick. So I just think we need to look at the remaining games and just say, look, come on, just go for it. And if it means having 20 shots from outside the box and only half of them are on target, two or three might go in. But we've got to, You know, it's the old thing, isn't it? You don't win the raffle unless you buy a ticket, and all these little intricate one twos that don't come off, and play. And I know what they're doing when they're playing the ball across the pitch. They're trying to stretch the opposition so they can, you know, find spaces and that. Just take a bit of responsibility. I'd rather see them having a dig from 20, 25 yards than trying to pass the way through a low block. And it'll be interesting to see how Fulham sets up, whether they want to just contain us, or whether they want to come out and have a go at us on Sunday.
Tom, so going back to last night's game after our discussion on Mo and the like, you know, we go in at half time at 0-0. And even then, you're thinking, well, you know, I'd have settled for being 1-0 up at half time. We've got 45 minutes, get another goal within the first 15, 20 minutes of the second half. And, you know, it's game on. But Gasperini seemed to get hold of them and started to show them where they needed to stop us making the runs and where we were getting the space, and they just seemed to block off. And the thing about last night was, what we all need to remember is that Atlanta had done the job that they needed to do in the first leg at Anfield. They didn't need to come out, so they didn't need to leave any space behind for Liverpool players to run into. So they started to defend even deeper at the start of the second half, and just relied on, you know, Liverpool being sloppy, giving the ball away, and then them trying to hit us on the break. But their sole aim, and rightly so, was just to protect what they had. So they did make it difficult for us, but we just seemed to, as the game went on, we seemed to just lack the belief that we were going to get through. There was the passing got sloppy, it was too slow. Players were hanging on to the ball for too long. They were making the wrong decisions, and even the substitutions. You know, when the likes of Salah went off and Diaz come off, and Nunez and Jota come on, and then Harvey Elliott come on as well for Szoboszlai. You know, it never really changed the flow of the game at all. And I have to say, Tom, that it did surprise me that Curtis Jones wasn't hooped, because I thought he had another really sort of average game. And, you know, Curtis is much better than we've seen over the last sort of few games.
I thought he was. I thought he was a bit. He was a bit poor in the first half. I thought he wasn't. He was trying. He was trying. He was pressing, and he was making an effort. Whether he could have cut, I think a lot of them could have come off less. I think at that stage, a lot of them had run out of steam. I mean, we looked like, you know, when you ever somewhere before when Trent went off. I think when Trent went off, all the inventiveness out of the side sort of disappeared. Like, I think Liverpool at that stage, more or less, as you said, at 70 minutes, they weren't going to get a second, because, as you said, Gasperini, he's a clever manager. I said that in the last podcast. He clever, clever manager. He plays to his strengths, doesn't he? And his strengths are what they are. You know, like, he presses high and he presses quick. He puts the players under pressure. He doesn't give the goalkeeper. And I messaged Ali, and he I said, look how he said I said, look how they're pressing, you know, like the defenders. And Ali, they were putting Alisson under pressure, you know, with the ball. And he said to me, well, just keep kicking it long. I said, you just keep kicking it long. You're just not keeping possession. You're losing possession, and it's just coming back at you constantly. And I think as 70 minutes went, I thought Liverpool, I don't think the substitutions helped, to be fair. And I think by that stage, I think we'd run out of ideas. The only positive I'll take out of last night, and I think this could be a massive positive, this, you know. I think, you know, after a run of defeats where we've had a couple of defeats and we've not been, and a draw where we've not looked really into it, like, I think winning last night, even though it was a scrappy 1-0 win, and you could argue that they really didn't try, but I'm sure they did. He wouldn't have wanted to lose. So coming away with a win might be a thing that sort of injects a little bit of confidence, you know, with players coming back from injury who are now like Curtis, this is his fourth game or fifth game. The same with you know, Trent, this is his second or third game. Jota, it's his fourth game. So these players are coming back now. So who knows, that I think that 1-0 win might motivate the players and push them on. So although you know we did run out of ideas and we just petered out, I think on the bigger picture, I was glad we kept the win.
Yeah, it was also good. Just although they didn't threaten us much, but just to have a clean sheet as well.
Yeah.
It could bring a bit of confidence, but they played it how you would expect a team defending a lead in Europe to play. I mean, second half was littered with niggly little fouls breaking the play up, so we couldn't get any momentum going anyway. You know, they were pulling shirts, just enough to give a foul away, but maybe not enough to get a yellow card and stuff. And they were just breaking the play up. And it's what any good team does to when they're defending a lead. You see it out. You see it here with Man City and Arsenal, and to some extent we can do it as well when we need to. And if you break the momentum up with the opposition, you've got to. It's like starting all over again. It's like snakes and ladders. You get halfway up the board and it's a snake, so you've got to start all over again at the bottom. And they just broke up any momentum we could have carried into the second half. But I agree with Tom. We just ran out of steam in the end after about an hour, 65 minutes, and we were creating nothing. And it was just like a boxer just pouring you away, just jabbing. And they were just keeping us at arm's length, to be honest. And, you know, I think the writing was pre-match. I was walking the dog last night and I met a fellow Liverpool fan and he said, "What do you reckon tonight?" I said, "I think we can win." I said, "We've got to be two up after about an hour." I said, "If we can get two up after an hour, I'll believe." I said, "But the longer it goes on, it's just either 1-0 or 0-0 or even worse, we concede." I said, "But hand on heart, I know we've turned games round in the past, but I just can't see us doing it tonight." And so it proved, to be honest. And it was just a game too far. And as I say, hopefully we can take the disappointment to going out at the quarterfinals and use that as a fillip, really, to get these last few Premier League games and just go for it in every game. Just go for it. You know, it's pointless. I thought the other thing I could accuse them of last night, they were quite pedantic at the back. And I'm not saying it long balls all the time, but there were times, you know, on 60 minutes, 65 minutes when we were looking for a goal and we'd waste a minute or two just passing it along the back four. And I know they're trying to draw the other team out, but when the other team aren't playing ball, you've got to think of something else. And I just think as the game went on, the longer the game went on, I just couldn't see a goal coming again. You know, I just couldn't see it. So, you know, it was not a lesson learned. I think, you know, the tie was lost at Anfield. You know, we were such a poor display at Anfield. That's where the tie was lost. But like Tom said, we've got a little bit of credibility back. We won away in Europe and we've kept a clean sheet to boot. So let's hope that gives them the impetus to go into Fulham on Sunday and crack on, you know.
Yeah, so you know, as Pete said there, and you said, Tom, the game just fizzled out, didn't it? And, you know, we never really worked the goalkeeper. We had a couple of sniffs, but, you know, we couldn't really get the shots on target, and the substitutes, all of them who come on, none of them were really effective or changed the flow of the game in any shape or form. So it was a good result. It's never a poor result when you win away from home in Europe, but in the context of the tie, it was really disappointing that after getting such an early goal, we couldn't go on and sort of put them under real pressure and really make the effort, you know, to get back in the game and trying to get through to the semi-final. But we'll find out over the next sort of 5 or 6 weeks whether it was an actual blessing in disguise or not. So I'll ask you now, and I know it's probably a bit of a difficult decision, to name your player of the match, Tom.
Oh, that is a hard one, that Les. That really is a hard one. I do you know what? Probably you could look at either Trent. I thought Trent did well. I think he overall for his first game back. I think he drove an awful lot. You know, I thought Robbo did okay. You know, and Virgil was all right. And but do you know what? I want to give it to Trent. There's McAllister as well. I thought played well, but I think I'm going to give it to Trent for his 70 minutes for his endeavour and the thoughts. But I know he gave a few misplaced passes, but for his first real test, and I thought he'd done. I'll give it to Trent.
Peter, you going for me?
Also agree with Tom. I thought Gakpo had a decent game in the first half. He was trying to drive us forward and he was getting into little pockets of space trying to drive on. But as I say, we get to the edge of the box and then we try to be a little bit overcomplicated. I thought Robbo had a good game again. Like I say, there was times he was playing at centre forward. He was all over the place trying to get us going. But I tend to agree with Tom. I think for the 70 minutes he was on the pitch, certainly in the first half as well. I thought Trent was fantastic, you know, after coming back after such a long layoff, and he was just picking out passes that, you know, possibly other players don't see, and he was stretching Atalanta with the diagonals and stuff and his energy, and as I say, it was just a shame that he sort of ran out of steam after about an hour, but I think even though he went off early, I'd have to concur with Tom and say it was Trent.
Yeah, I'd agree. Make it a full house. I thought Trent was the best player, and I thought when he run out of steam, so did Liverpool basically. So honourable mentions really to Gakpo. I thought had a decent game, and also the two centre backs who were isolated at times but battled really hard. Both Virgil and Abu against Schmacker, who was a handful, physically strong, and give them a real battle. But they both stood up to that really well and defended when they needed to defend, and they got a clean sheet, so they needed, deserved a mention. But for me, it's Trent. Just before we move on, lads, it's just being announced that another one of the legends from the 70s has sadly passed away tonight. Leighton James, former Burnley, Derby, Swansea, and Wales winger. So, yeah, a little bit of your thoughts on Leighton James. He was a real stylish winger, wasn't he, Tom, back in the day?
Yeah, I remember the first seeing him when he played for Burnley, Les. He was a quality player, wasn't he? He's, like very, very quick, very similar in, in the Peter Barnes mould, this type of winger, like
Very
he
direct.
tricky. Yeah, he was. He really. A lot of all these old players now, isn't it? It's sad to see,
Yeah.
like a whole
I just.
generation of that more or less every week.
I'm sure Tommy Smith's up there waiting with open
Yeah,
arms to
give him a
renew
kiss.
Jeez.
Yeah.
the folk story about Smithy pointing at him and saying, "I'll have you," and he never went near the ball. But
Yeah.
he was a typical player, Leighton James. Very, as I say, very direct, very pacey.
Yeah.
Probably. I mean, Burnley were a decent side then, but they were never going to win anything. And you could probably see Leighton James, being possibly, in a better side. I don't want to disrespect Burnley by saying that, but
Well,
he
he went
probably.
to. He was the big. When you think about Pete, in around about the mid 70s, he was one of the sort of icons, wasn't he? One of the players who was always linked with a big money move, and he eventually got that move to Derby County. And when they were champions, and he never really sort of, reproduced his form really that he showed at Burnley, did he? And then he eventually moved on to Swansea under John Toshak.
It's strange. Probably he felt comfortable at Burnley. He'd been there that long, and sometimes these moves don't make off, but make up. But as I say, you just could have seen him in a better side than Burnley without being too disrespectful to them,
Yeah, Tom. So really sad news that, isn't it? All the thoughts are with, all his former teammates, the fans of the clubs that he represented, everybody, in Wales, because he was also a Welsh international, and most importantly, his family and friends.
Yeah,
So
very much so, Les.
real sad news that that's just broke while we've been on the podcast. Tom, I'd just like to, before we move on and preview the game on Sunday against Fulham, you know, last night marked the end of Jurgen Klopp's managerial career in Europe as Liverpool manager. And it's really, I think it's really worth pointing out that when he took over as manager, Liverpool were a team that had lost the way. You know, the reputation, you know, wasn't at its strongest, let us say, you know, in Europe. And, you know, when you think about it, within 4 years, he got Liverpool to a Europa League final and two Champions League finals. And, you know, we had, you know, two of the greatest nights that we can remember in Europe, a home to Dortmund and a home, obviously, to Barcelona. You know, amongst many other, you know, great games that we've witnessed with Jürgen at the helm, both at Anfield and away. And it's a really sad, isn't it, that in a way that we went out with such a whimper last night that I don't think he deserved to go out that way, but that's ultimately how it's turned out.
Yeah, I think that's very true, Dallas. I was thinking that last night. You know, when you look and you think, you know, to be brutally honest, we're a much better team than Atlanta. And I think you could argue at Atlanta, you could look and say that they got the tactics right at Anfield, but we did not help ourselves at Anfield at all. I think, as we all said last week, we underestimated them and we didn't take them seriously. We were looking beyond the quarterfinals to the semi-finals and the final, you know. And I think that's where we, if anything, is where we went wrong. It's such a sad end. It would have been fitting for him to go out in the final in Dublin because it's what he deserved. But, you know what, to go out in the manner that we did, like it was pretty sad. Not a great end for him, but he's been a fan. You know, he's took us. I always remember Rafa Benitez. You know, when he came in and everyone used to say, oh, he wasn't interested in the league. He was only interested in Europe, getting us to be the number one team in Europe. Well, Jürgen done that as well, but took us to the league as well. But like, you know, and it would have been nice to win the Europa League because that was the one he missed out on, you know, and he's won everything else.
Yeah, Pete, what's your views of Jürgen's European legacy as now that his sort of European adventure has ended?
Sorry, you broke up there, Les. Sorry, what were you saying?
I said, what's your view of Jürgen's European legacy, you know, now that his European adventure has ended?
Yeah, well, it's like you say, we've had some fantastic nights in Europe, haven't we, home and away. You know, you look at some of the, you know, the games away at Porto and not just the turnarounds that we've had against Dortmund and Barcelona, but some of the matches we've had. And it was just a shame. And I think pre-match yesterday, I think he said, if we're going to go out, let's go out in a blaze of glory. You know, let's try and make it. And as you say, it was a bit of a whimper in the end, and it was a bit sad to see. And at the end of the game, I noticed when he walked over to the small band of Liverpool fans, they were only allowed a few hundred tickets. He actually took his cap off and doffed his cap as if to say, well, you know, I've taken it as far as I can. Obviously, we know he's going in the summer. So, it was just a shame. And you look back on the first leg again, just going back to the Atalanta games, and we could have been two up before the game started, really. You know, Nunes missed the chance, Harvey hit the bar. And it's all what ifs, isn't it? And after they got their first goal, it was a little bit, once again, it was just a little bit powder puff, wasn't it? But yeah, his legacy that, you know, I've noticed on some of the posts on some of the opposition fans saying, why are Liverpool fans treating him in such high regard? He's only won one European Cup and one Premier League and a couple of League Cups or whatever. But it's what that fella did when he came into the club. Like you say, we were just a mid-table ordinary team, weren't we? And within the space of 3 or 4 years, he was turning us into, you know, the monster, the mentality monsters that we are. You know, we like to think we still are today. So he certainly left a legacy, and we just hope that whoever the new incumbent is, he comes on, and he's certainly got a good squad to work with. And I'm sure he'll bring, their own players, and depending on who the new manager is. So he certainly left Liverpool in a healthier position than when he started.
Do you know what? Can I just say something quickly to that, Les? Do you know what? The opposition fans who say that about him, about his legacy and what he's achieved and stuff, he'd done it at a time that the 115ers were cheating all the way through, at the same period. And he turned a struggling Liverpool side, into a team that was getting 97 and 96 points in the league, higher than Manchester United ever achieved. And at the same time, all these so-called other supporters who used that as a weapon to beat him would give anything to have him as their manager.
Yeah, definitely.
I was just going to ask you then, you've used that word disingenuous, and I'd like to use a stronger word to describe Danny Mills after his comments, about Jurgen Klopp. And it's basically what you said there, that, he hasn't really achieved much at Liverpool with only winning one league title. And to be fair to Mark Goldbridge put him in his place and said exactly what you've just said there, that basically Jurgen Klopp would have won 3 or 4 league titles at Liverpool, but for the 115ers. And he said, when you're talking about modern football, you have to take them out of the equation and look what's being achieved because of the way they've achieved what they have achieved. And as you used the word, cheating, And they've got 115 charges to try and prove that they haven't cheated. But Danny Mills' comments were an absolute disgrace. For an absolute disgrace of a footballer who kicked his way through his career, was a dirty bastard, and has no class about him as a pundit. So I'll move on from there. And Pete, we look ahead to the big game on Sunday afternoon, and I'm sure you've had your pen and piece of paper out. So what have you got written down is your starting 11. I want to ask you a little bit of a difference here this time, if you don't mind. I want to know what team you would pick and what team you think Jürgen will pick, if you see what I mean, or if they're one and the same.
Right. Just before I read my team out, just to confirm to you, lads, I'm retiring from work on Tuesday. There are rumours going round that it's coincided with Jürgen leaving, and you might be listening to the new Liverpool manager here. So let's see what happens with my team selection, right?
Go on.
What an exclusive that is, Tom.
The
new Liverpool manager exclusively revealed on the LFC Red Poets podcast.
And we've got a ticket for every game, Les.
Yeah. you join the queue, Yeah. You can come on with the sponge, yeah. You and Les can be the trainers.
Yeah.
I'm thinking the back four probably the same as last night, with maybe the exception I think Kwanzaa might come in for Canarsie. I think midfield Endo will come back in alongside Macker and Szoboszlai. And then up front, I still think Salah will get his start, and I think Diaz will get a start. It's just whether Joss is fit enough to start for 90 minutes. And if not, I think Nunes will start the game. So that would be my team, as I say. I think Kwanzaa for Konate, Endo and Nunes to come in. Actually, what Jürgen's got to pick, depending on how Konate reacts from last night, he might make the start. I do think that'll be the midfield, Endo, Macker and Szoboszlai. And then, as I say, it's whether he starts Jota. I don't think he'll start. I think he'll be on the bench. So I think he might go with Salah, Nunes and Diaz as well.
Tom, what's your team and what team do you think Jürgen will pick?
I think I can see that mainly the same as Pete. And I think if there's going to be a change, the only change will be Kwanzaa for Konate. I think because of with the limit, with the amount of games we've got coming up, I think we've got 3 games in 6 days, haven't we, Les?
Yeah, that's it now, yeah.
So like it's, you know, so I'm counting the other one as well. I think it's likely he's gonna chabby them, he's gonna mix them all up in the next couple of days. So I think the five, anyone can play up front, but so I haven't got a clue what team Jürgen will pick. I think he might rest Diaz at the weekend and go with Nunes, with Salah and with Gakpo.
Okay. Well, I think Pete's team is probably virtually spot on to what Jürgen will pick. The only thing I think Canati will start. I think Canati will start, and the rest of the team would be as Pete selected. I would, if Jota's fit and he can get, an hour 70 minutes out of him, I would start with Jota, Nunes, and Diaz up front, and have Salah on the bench. To come on for Jota later on, and that might give Salah a little bit of a nudge. And as the opposition maybe are tired a little bit, it might make him a little bit more effective than he has been of late. So that's what I would do. But we, it's a must-win game, isn't it, Tom?
Oh,
We
got you,
got
Les.
if we two of
Got
these leagues
you.
weekend when Aston Villa beat Arsenal. And it's important this weekend, isn't it? Because City haven't got a league game now. We've got two league games before they play again. They play next Thursday away at Brighton. So it is important, isn't it, Tom, that we come away with the 3 points on Sunday to really put the pressure on City and Arsenal, and sort of tell everybody that we're still in this race going into the midweek fixtures.
Yeah, I think so, Les. I think, do you know what? I think with Trent coming back, that fills you full of confidence, doesn't it? It gives you more confidence, more belief. I'm hoping that Szoboszlai finds his form. He comes out and he finds a little bit of form, because there's a tremendous footballer there. But after what we were discussing earlier about his confidence or injuries or whatever, but there's an amazing footballer. Gravenberch hasn't figured at all. He's a player that we can use, So I think, with having so many like players, I think Jadon Dans will play some part in these next 3 games, Les.
Yeah, Pete, it is important, isn't it, that, as I said to Tom, come the final whistle, on Sunday evening, that Liverpool have come away with the 3 points, and it doesn't really matter how we get the 3 points, but we've got to get the 3 points. I don't think we can afford to slip up again, because we can't make City relax and think this is just going to be, a cakewalk between now and the end of the season. We've got to do our job, try and win our remaining, six league games, and hope that that's enough.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully Wolves will do us a favour on Saturday evening and at least take a point, get a point from Arsenal, or at least stop them getting the 3 points. And then, who knows, we could win at Fulham and go top. And then, like you say, we've got the Derby and then West Ham away in quick succession. But yeah, it's a cliche, every game's a must-win game, but this definitely is. It's if we can get the 3 points, but it's not going to be an easy task for Fulham on the day. They're a very good side. They blow hot and cold at times. But, if they play up to their potential, it could be a tough game for us. But I'm just hoping that, as I say, with the bit with the disappointments of going out last night, it just gives the lads a bit of extra emphasis going into Sunday. And we do the job, whether it's a scruffy win or whether we do it in style is another thing. I think the way we're playing, we take a scruffy 1-0. Because we're not scoring chances. But like I say, one of these games, we are going to put some chances away, and someone's going to be on the wrong end of a hammering.
Tom, so go to you first. What's your score prediction for Sunday?
Do you know what? I've got a feeling that it's going to change. You know, I really have. I keep saying all the time that, you know, like we're going to score goals, and it doesn't come, but we keep creating. I'm going to go with 3-1. You know, and like I've got a feeling that somebody somewhere is going to get a tonking before long. We can't keep missing chances like we're doing, and you know, so. I'm sticking. I'm going to stick out for 3-1 and hope and keep my fingers crossed.
Peace.
I'm hoping we can keep another clean sheet, but I think Fulham might ask a few more questions of us than Atalanta did. So I'm going to go for a narrow 2-1 victory for Liverpool.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with Ali being back for a clean sheet, and I think it's going to be a nervy 2-0 win for Liverpool. I think we might go 1-0 up, and then it could be a late second goal. But Mo, after listening to this podcast and doing this podcast tonight, I know you won't be listening. I'm not that stupid. But let's hope you are going home with the match ball. So I'll take loads of stick with great pleasure off Tommy on Sunday when we're doing the podcast, if you are. So as I say, I'm going for the 2-0 win for Liverpool. I just hope that I just want us to get back to winning ways. You know, to keep the tight ropes going along into the game against Everton, and then into the one against West Ham. And so when we play Tottenham in the week after West Ham, we're still very, very much in the race. And hopefully, fingers crossed, that we may actually be in control of the race when we play Tottenham. So that's my hope. So just before we finish this podcast, lads, just one thing, and I'll come to you on this, Tom, to start with. The results in on Wednesday night in the Champions League with the 115ers and Arsenal both going out, and then Liverpool, you know, joining them out of the competition, you know, on European competition on the Thursday. How do you think that sort of going to affect the race for the title? Because all of a sudden there's less games now for the teams to play. You know, I think after we've played our three games next week, I don't think Liverpool have got another midweek game now. Yeah, we've got a weekend game rearranged for the Monday against Aston Villa, but we haven't got a Saturday midweek game again now this season.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's interesting, isn't it, Les? You know what? I listened to what Peter was saying when Aston Villa got beat Arsenal, and then they had the draw, and then you're thinking, you know, like they seem to have lost the way completely, and they were well beaten apparently in Germany. So you don't know how that mentally affects them, do you? Automatically, you know, it's funny, isn't it? As we found out, you can't turn your form on and off. You know, like, and once you get a couple of bad results, you know, it affects you. You don't know how it affects the team. And the same for City. You know, like City now, you know, from even though they had 30 shots and they only scored, you know, like the one goal, and they were saying like they ended up, you know, like 60-odd% possession, but he lost it, didn't he? And it's a mental thing. And you know what? He believed he were going to win the treble. And all of a sudden, they're under real pressure coming to the FA Cup, because Chelsea's got a free hit there. And you know what? It's funny. With Chelsea, you never know what team's turning up, whether it's going to be, you know, like one that falls apart or one that gets a 4-4 draw with Manchester City, you know, like. So I think, you know, that if anything could destabilize them, Les, that get knocked out of Europe could have a really bad effect on both them teams, you know. What do you think?
I think more so City, because I didn't watch the City game. I watched the Arsenal game, to be honest. But I believe they were just, you know, they were just battering Madrid. I know Madrid got the early goal to, but I believe they battered Madrid, and they just couldn't, a bit like ourselves, just couldn't put the ball away. And I think that'd be a bigger body blow to City possibly than Arsenal going out to Munich. Because I watched the Munich game and Arsenal didn't really create much. Well, I say I watched the game, I watched the second half, to be honest. But he was saying the first half was very tentative by both sides. But second half, Madrid, sorry, Bayern could have put it to bed a lot sooner than they did. They had chances. So it could be a body blow for two, but I think the semi-final could be an interesting game against Chelsea because, I mean, Chelsea beat Everton 6-0. It probably wasn't a 6-0 game, but they were putting the chances away. I think Chelsea could turn City over. And a bit like ourselves, where we've had two or three bad results in 1 week, it could be the same for Man City. And if Chelsea turn them over, you could argue the fact that they've only got the league to go for and they're going to really go for it. But it can work in an adverse way for them. You know, they might struggle in the league as well.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping. I'm hoping that, them both get knocked out of the Champions League, which they both had desires on. And especially a semi-final against each other, will prove to be, a game that sort of, was the catalyst for a disappointing end of the season for the two of them. And, and hopefully, ironically, Liverpool were the only team to have won this week in Europe. You know what I mean? Actual one, because Villa won on penalties, West Ham drew, and Arsenal went got beat and City went out on pens. So Liverpool were the only actual winners this week, and I hope that although it was a 1-0 win, it wasn't a great performance. Ultimately, it didn't see us through, but I'm just hoping that that win is the scruffy win that gives it a little bit of a momentum to take into the rest of the season. And I'll be honest with you, I would have loved Liverpool to have got to Dublin. But if by getting knocked out by Atlanta, it means that we go on to win the league, I will take that every day of the week. But only the next 5 weeks will give us the answer to that. Anyway, on that note, we'll end this edition of the Late Flag. Thanks to Tom and Pete for joining me tonight. As you always say, when I end this podcast, justice for 97, you'll never walk alone. And don't bite the sun. And just a reminder, anybody who hasn't heard the podcast with Jerry Hicks, please give it a listen. It's a really hard listen, but an interesting listen. And once again, thanks to Jenny for joining us on that special Hillsborough podcast. So until next time, everybody, I'll see you soon.